And welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Tom Rainer, where we equip churches to move from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Revitalize and Replant is brought to you by the North American Mission Board.
My name is Tom Rainer. I am currently in Bradenton, Florida. I am joined by Jonathan, the voice Howe, who is currently in Franklin, Tennessee. And then I'm also joined in the production studio by Amy Jordan in Virginia. We are spread out, but we are talking about all things Revitalize and Replant. Of course, for those of you who are faithful and regular listeners of this podcast, you understand that Mark Clifton is with us every other podcast. He's not with us on this one, but we've been talking this week on the other podcast, Rainer on Leadership, about the whole issue of change. And we're going to continue that theme in the sense of revitalized church revitalization. And we will be talking about seven reasons a guiding coalition is vital in church revitalization. Jonathan, I haven't asked you a question. You're obviously in your home office right now. Are those family pictures above your head?
They are.
It looks like it from here.
Yes. All of my kids.
Very good. Got your three boys and your girl up there. Any pictures of Beth up there?
Right there.
Okay.
Her.
There you go. There you go. All right.
Okay.
I'm just looking. Amy J's in her office in Virginia, and I'm somewhere in Bradenton, Florida, enjoying. I don't know if I've ever mentioned to you, I really like being in Florida.
I know. That's why you're there.
Even in this warm weather, I like being in Florida. Let's talk about this whole thing about a guiding coalition. Many times when we talk about church revitalization, we talk about change. Many times when we talk about church revitalization, we talk about resistance to change. Many times when we talk about church revitalization, we ask, if we're supposed to change and lead change, and if there's resistance, then what is the solution? There's not a singular answer to it. Obviously, I think the best first answer would be prayer. That's the best way to start leading change. But then let's talk about this whole issue of guiding coalition. Jonathan, do you have the book, Who Moved My Pulpit?
I do.
I was looking on the screen. I thought I saw that.
Because we're talking about leading change in the church this week, I've got the Who Moved My Pulpit out. And chapter 5, ironically enough, is about the coalition. And I thought it would just be interesting if we could look at one thing in here, because we're not really talking about the makeup of coalition. We're going to talk about what they do and how it's vital to church revitalization. But some people may be looking at it and going, well, who needs to be part of the coalition? What types of people? And you list 5 things. I don't know if we have time to cover these real quick, but it just wouldn't take a second.
Take the time. Go for it.
In chapter 5, you talk about building this coalition, and you say that there's 5 descriptors to, as you seek to form the coalition. You need to look for chemistry. So they need to be eager for change. They need to be on board with things. They need to have positions. So you need people with, you know, some kind of position in the church. You can't, because they're going to have influence over groups of different people or things like that. And this also, I do want to point out, it's not manipulation. This is not building a coup or anything like that. This is like how to enact change for the betterment of the church. This is to be used in a positive way. They need to have influence. So even if they don't have positional influence or positional leadership, they need to have influence in the church. They need to have expertise. So they need to know something about the church and the change that needs to happen. You know, so if you're leading change in the music area, you want to have people that are inclined musically. If you're leading change in like student leadership, people that are involved in the student ministry. You don't want to get people that are involved in the senior adult ministry to lead change in the preschool ministry. That just doesn't work like that. So, and then finally, they need to, you know, they need to have leadership. So they need to have true leaders and to help you lead change. So they need to understand just basic leadership principles as well.
Did I write that?
You did.
Good.
Well, it's in your book. You can answer the first question.
I don't have a ghostwriter. So yes, if it's in my book, I wrote it.
There you go.
After 30 books, sometimes I don't remember everything that's in a book. I mean, somebody could read the Mueller report and their name could be Mueller and they may not remember everything in 450 pages. Well, I got several books. I don't remember everything that's there.
Yes.
Just to interject a political drama that took place a few weeks ago into this whole thing. So let's talk about this whole thing about a guiding coalition.
Yeah. So these coalitions, like we talked about, it needs to have a web of relationships. That goes back to the influence and the leadership that they have.
when you get, let's say, how many did you name, Jonathan? Five?
Five, yes.
Let's say each of those five has a web of influence of five, and then each of those have a web of influence of five, and all of them connect to the church. I think you're at 125 right there, if you take five cubed.
Five cubed is 125, yes.
125. Some of your churches don't even have 125 people that are in attendance. Here's the thing about it is, if you have five people, there's a good possibility that you're going to have a significant multiple of that influence by those people.
Oh, yeah.
Who then could influence others. And so it's an extending web of influence. You're not just influencing the immediate influencers, you are influencing those that they will influence as well.
Yeah, it makes sense. That's the case in anything. I mean, whenever you have, you know, it's that exponential factor, the influence carries. So,
and remember, we're talking about a guiding coalition. We're talking about getting people on board. We're talking about allies. We're talking about people that get it. They may not be the rubber stamp type of people that sometimes we hear about, but they get it and they want you to succeed. They want the church to do well. And so they want to be on board and they're ready to move forward. And they do have webs of relationships.
Yeah. And they also have trust that the pastor may not have, especially if it's a new pastor.
Yep. And a new pastor in a church revitalization is anybody with fewer than 5 years.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes. And a church revitalization, I was doing a doctoral seminar at Southeastern Seminary, sponsor of our other podcast. And somebody was listening to different things I was saying, and somebody else listened. And then when I finished, Dr. Lawless, who is the professor of record for the seminary, asked the group, the doctoral seminar, what was the overriding theme that you heard in Dr. Rayner's presentations and his discussion, which was 4 hours long? What was the overriding theme? And the overriding theme was change takes time. It is, you know, we talked in a previous Rayner on Leadership podcast about the book, Eating the Elephant. Change is a methodical process. And so part of that change, Pastor, is if you've been there 5 years or less, you really, really need to have this guiding coalition be the trust factor that you may not have established. You say, what? 5 years? Yes. In many of these churches, 5 years is but like a day in their history. And so they have long-term relationships. They've been there. And in most of these churches, you've got 5 years before you are even truly trusted as the pastor. It doesn't mean you don't change, but you use that guiding coalition to build that trust factor for you.
All right. And the next point for the guiding coalition is that it is critical for them to understand the history of the church. I mean, these are people who usually, whenever you have a coalition, a guiding coalition with you, they've got a history. They've been there for a while. They've probably been there a lot longer than the pastor.
Exactly.
So they understand things that have happened that the pastor had never heard about, never knew about, or never would have known about until they speak up.
That is why it is imperative for pastors to do a lot of listening, especially with the guiding coalition or with the influencers of this guiding coalition. Listen to them talk about the history of the church. One of the things that will come up is they talk about the history of the church, and we've had Mike Glenn on in the past, and he's talked about how he used this in his leadership position. As they talk about the history of the church, they will inevitably talk about change that took place. And you're able to grab that moment and say, listen, this is where you were part of the change process. You are part of the future of the church, even as you are a part of the past and the present, and you help move this church forward. So as you listen to the history of the church, it gives you those seminal moments, those moments of opportunity to grab them and say, look, this is why we need you to lead us as we move to the future. The history defines the present and projects the future. And you need to get that history from the guiding coalition.
Yes, the coalition also can handle roadblocks that may come up along the way.
I've seen some pastors who are absolutely proficient at this. Inevitably, in any position of leadership, you are going to run into roadblocks. You're going to run into situations that were either anticipated, but you hope they wouldn't happen, or totally unanticipated consequences, and you then have to deal with them. some of the best leaders I know don't shrink from that, but they go to people within the Guiding Coalition and say, let me tell you what has happened. Can you help me out in this situation? For example, thinking of a pastor I had a conversation with not too long ago, and there seemed to be just this resistance that was taking place with another staff member related to this pastor. And it was hard to move forward because the staff member had tenure and he had webs of relationships. And the pastor went to a couple of people and said, help me to understand what's going on. Why is this other staff member so antagonistic at times? And why does he put up these roadblocks that seem to be unnecessary? Well, the Guiding Coalition weren't even aware of it. They were not in the staff meetings. They didn't see the passive aggressive behavior. They didn't see those things. And so what they did was they handled it. They didn't go roughshod over the staff person, but now that they had awareness, that roadblock became an issue that they said, let us handle this. We know this person. We know the situation, or we know some of his situation. Let us handle it. Some of the wisest change leaders I know dealing with the Guiding Coalition are going to be people who can handle these roadblocks. Sometimes, here's another story. This is in a church revitalization. This is a relatively new church. It happens to be my church. Our church is 3 years old, not even 3 years old, but we're in the process of acquiring, by the time this goes live, I'm trying to see what date you have on this one, Jonathan. But anyway, by the time this goes live, we may have acquired a new building in Spring Hill. I got to tell you, there were a lot of roadblocks along the way. There were financial roadblocks. There were zoning roadblocks. For example, bought the building and I at least put a contract on the building, and the city said, let's remind you, when you have a gathering place, you have to have a whole new sprinkler system. And so just like that, $88,000 bid came in for those, the low bid for a sprinkler system.
Well, we had this problem at our church. Well, not problem, but we had the same kind of thing. Our church just did a big renovation. And because of that, we had to bring a lot of things up to code, including sprinkler systems. We had to add sprinkler systems in all over the existing buildings that didn't have it. And it was like $100,000 on top of the other renovations that we were doing.
And you know, Jonathan, I don't feel sorry for your church. I feel sorry for my church.
Yeah, I know. A little different financial position.
Yeah, a little bit different financial position. But what did Jess do? And he went to leaders within the church. There's a city leader within the church. He did not ask for special privileges. Jess did not. He just said, August 22nd. So, no, they won't be closed on August 22nd. He didn't ask for special privileges from the city. He just said, tell me the best way that I need to get this done through the city. So he used some of the Guiding Coalition to handle that roadblock. Another one was the financial issue. Okay, we barely scraped by enough money for a down payment, but now we've got all these improvement issues. What do we do? He went to a lender, and the lender said, let's talk about some ways we can get creative with helping you. One example after another where the Guiding Coalition helped overcome roadblocks. You need that Guiding Coalition again and again and again in church revitalization, and you need to depend upon them on a regular basis and not hesitate to call on them when you run into these roadblocks.
Well, and that a lot of times, the roadblocks, those are overcome by relationships. Relationships exactly. Overcome roadblocks.
You got that right. Totally so. That's what's happening in many of these churches that are revitalizing.
Yeah, because the people in they get on the same wavelength, they understand the vision, they get behind the vision, and they leverage their relationships to help the entire church, which helps the entire community, and you know, the gospel is proclaimed in the area. So
exactly.
All right. Exactly. Number five, the coalition can be a source of encouragement.
I have in change of leadership always depended upon a coalition to be my Barnabas factor. They didn't love me no matter what. They loved me unconditionally, but they didn't always tell me that I was doing things right. But they were always encouragers. I had that Guiding Coalition at each of the four churches where I served as pastor. All four of them were revitalization situations. In other positions of leadership, I've had groups like that, both informal and formal. When you are a leader, you will, if you're leading, lead change. If you're leading change, you will need a Guiding Coalition. And if you have a Guiding Coalition, I hope you let that guiding coalition be a source of encouragement. And sometimes I just needed people to tell me, it's not as bad as you think it is, Rainer. I would have a visceral reaction to something, and the people in the guiding coalition would say, hey, it's really not that bad. Just give it a few days. I was like, the world's coming to an end. No, it's really not that bad. And my visceral reaction was an overreaction, and they were encouragers that helped me walk through that.
All right. Number six, they also are a source of accountability. So they give you encouragement and they give you accountability.
All right, let's go to the guiding coalition and the previous, or the 3 points up to this point, numbers 4, 5, and 6 on our list. If this guiding coalition has helped you handle roadblocks, if this guiding coalition has been a source of encouragement for you in the midst of challenges, then you should totally trust this coalition to give you feedback, advice, and to keep you accountable. One of the most dangerous things a leader can do is to be a free agent without accountability. The times that I thought that free agency was just a fun thing to do, I don't have to worry about anybody or anything, have been some of the most difficult moments of my leadership. The coalition should be your source of accountability because you trust them and they trust you. And in both situations, it is reciprocal. You want what's best for the church. You want what's best for the organization. So they should be there as sources of accountability, and you shouldn't hesitate to listen to them.
Yeah. And you know, it's not listed here, but they're also sources of prayer. I think that's kind of an undergirding principle here.
Exactly.
That everything that you're doing with the coalition, through the coalition, in the church is undergirded through prayer, and they should be some of those who are constantly praying for you, praying for themselves, praying for the church, and praying for what God's going to do in the church.
I've had that guiding coalition in all of my major leadership positions in church. It was different positions at Lifeway. It was usually board members and a couple of leaders on the executive team. But I've always had that guiding coalition, and they didn't just encourage me and they didn't just help me with roadblocks. In all situations, they called me to accountability, and I needed it more times than I would like to admit.
Yeah. And then finally, the coalition can provide the wisdom of crowds.
One thing I have noticed is that when you get 2 or 3 or 4 people together, not too many more than that, 2 or 3 or 4, and you start thinking about next steps, you start brainstorming, all of a sudden people start saying things and say, I never thought about that. It may be a minor component of something. It may be a major element of it, but you start bringing people together, and they, if they, of course, in a guiding coalition, have the good of the church as their best, as their desire for best, then you start listening to them and you say, I never would have thought about that. Jonathan, I do this at Church Answers. You and Amy, Jess, Art, Sam, Kevin's coming on, and others, and Jenna and others. I'll say, what do y'all think? And I'll hear different pieces of this. And all of a sudden, it'll be like light bulbs going on because there's more than one voice speaking into it. And I love the wisdom of crowds because I say this phrase, not of false modesty, but of total sincerity. I am not the brightest bulb in the chandelier. And I need the wisdom of crowds. I need other people to speak into me, to speak into the situation. And that's why I love to hear from other people. If you're in a revitalization situation and you're looking at, man, where can I get to the next step in the future? Bring in those people that you trust and let's say, let's talk about this and listen to what they have to say. You'll be absolutely amazed at the wisdom of crowds that is beginning to unfold.
Well, and also not just on what you can do, but maybe what you shouldn't do. Because this goes back to the point number 3 with the understanding the history of the church. They can tell you, oh, that's been tried before. And not just because it's been tried before and failed doesn't mean you don't do it. But they can help you navigate those type of issues so that you don't make maybe the same mistakes a previous pastor or the previous 6 pastors made, something like that.
I was in a revitalization. I was a pastor of this church, and I was getting really frustrated because here we are trying to move the church to more of a healthy growth instead of the slow erosion that it had been experiencing. But there would always be 3 weeks where attendance would dip dramatically, and it wasn't the typical attendance dip. You know, wanting a holiday, wanting a summer vacation. And it was what I call the campers. And I almost even just saying it just then, I almost said it with disdain, and I should not in that. But there would be this ton of people that would go on this, these camping, long camping trips together, and families, and they'd be out, and I get frustrated that, and many of them are leaders in the church. I said, how can I go on 3 weeks? It's killing the church.
So you got this big leadership vacuum for 3 weeks.
We got an attendance vacuum.
Well, that too, but you're scrambling. You've got to tie this down and all that. So, yeah.
So I go to one of the people in my coalition. I said, I got to do something about this. They said, no, you don't. I said, this is ridiculous. No, you don't. I said, he said, you've got a lot more challenges that you need to be tackling other than this one.
Yeah.
You don't need to go after this one. There's nothing inherently wrong in what's going on. Leave it alone. Yeah. He was exactly right.
Yeah. This is item number 47 on the things that you need to worry about list. And you've got a lot more that are a lot more important.
And the campers were, for the most part, my supporters. I mean, I would have been attacking my supporters in that. Let them go camping, the pagans. No, I shouldn't say that.
That's brutal.
So, the guiding coalition is important. And that last point of accountability, the wisdom of crowds, those last 2 points, in addition to encouragement and roadblocks and the history and the trust and the web of relationships, pastor, church leaders, if you are leading a revitalization, I hope you have a coalition, because if you're tackling this solo, you're going to go so low.
Wow.
You play on that one, Jonathan?
Wow.
I'll stop it on that one.
Please.
With a thanks to the North American Mission Board, our sponsor.
Yeah, you're going to be there next week. It's a big event in Alpharetta.
Andrew Peterson, Mike Harlan,
Clifton.
Mark Clifton, me.
It's going to be awesome. Wow. Looking forward to it. So, but the North American Mission Board, they do sponsor us each and every week here on Revitalize and Replant. More than 10% of churches in North America are at risk of closing, and the North American Mission Board is committed to reversing this trend by decreasing the death rate of existing churches and simultaneously increasing the birth rate of new ones. To learn more about what it means to become a replanting pastor or to explore resources for replanting and revitalization in your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.
All right. Thank you again for joining us on Revitalize and Replant. This has been Tom Rayner with Jonathan Howe and Amy Jordan. Be back with us for the next episode of Revitalize and Replant, where we're joined by Mark Clifton. And as always, our desire is to help churches get healthier, but we're not doing this alone. In God's power, we're doing this together.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant with Tom Rayner. If you'd like to learn more about re-energizing your church to reach your community, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Google Play, or in your favorite podcasting app. For additional resources on church leadership and to join the conversation online, visit TomRayner.com, where we are growing healthy churches together.